broadcasting live from the Capital OTB studios. This is Racing Across America with Seth Merrow.
Good morning. Welcome to Racing Across America on this Saturday morning. I'm Seth Merrow. Thanks for tuning in. Should be a fun show today. Again, a week out from the Breeders' Cup. Still wanted to talk a little bit about the great 2 days of racing. So we'll go to a quick break in a moment, but we'll come back from that. Tim Wilkin will join us. He was down at Keeneland covering for the Blood Horse. So we'll get some of Tim's impressions on the really fabulous 2 days and the lead up to it as well in the aftermath. A little bit later on, really excited to talk to our friend Terry Finley from West Point Thoroughbreds. What a weekend for them with Flight Line kind of capping a great 2 days down at the Breeders' Cup. And then they sold the 2.5% share in Flight Line on Monday at auction for $4.6 million. But again, it was just a really a fun weekend for the West Point folks, obviously. They've also got a couple in stakes action tomorrow in New York. Maybe we'll get some thoughts on those two runners as well, Parnak and Decorated Invader, but Terry Finley coming up a little bit later on. Just before we get into it, do want to alert you. I saw Brian Natto, our colleague, tweeted out, and it'll be fun to watch with Pete Aiello from Gulfstream on vacation. Pete is normally the morning line guy, but Brian has done morning lines for some European outlets for quite a while. Brian's going to be doing the morning line over the next, I think, week or couple of weeks maybe down at Gulfstream. So it'll be fun to see Brian's work there. And I also wanted to note, because our friend Ron Gierkink tweeted out, there's an apprentice jockey up at Woodbine, and she's only been going for a couple of weeks. I don't know. I had her. Let me see if I can quickly pull it up. Just to see how long she's been going. And I'm not quite sure how to pronounce the name. So Sophia Vives, V-I-V-E-S. So again, I'm not totally sure how that's pronounced. But let me just go back and see. I have her page here. So she started the 29th of October. So she's been racing for a couple of weeks. But she got her fourth victory yesterday. 16 starts she's had in a couple of weeks. Four wins, 3 seconds, and a third. So she's been in the money half the time. She's won a quarter of her starts. But with four victories, if you're an apprentice, you have as long as you want to get that first four. When you get five victories, you go from the 10-pound to the 7-pound, and your clock starts. Now you have a year. And according to Ron Gierkink, she got the fourth win yesterday at Woodbine, and she says, I'm not coming back till next year. She said, I'm taking a, because she's based at Woodbine. And Woodbine has about another month to go, and then they're off for the winter, so she would lose some time. And I kind of thought, boy, it seems like there should be something in the rules to take that into account where you could get credit for, well, I'm not going to be racing for 3 months or whatever. Can I fold that over? But I guess that's not the case. So I just thought it was really intriguing that she's off to this blazing hot start, but she's, because of circumstances, and I suppose I can't blame her. She's kind of saying, you know, I'm going to step back so that I have the really the meat of the apprenticeship when I get back going. But I just one to maybe keep our eyes on north of the border. Sophia, again, Vives, V-I-V-E-S. All right, there's a couple of notes I wanted to get to, but I also want to get to our friend Tim Wilkins. So we'll take a quick break. We'll connect with Tim, and we'll get some of his thoughts. As, again, he was down there covering for the Blood Horse last weekend's Breeders' Cup at Keeneland. So that's all coming up right after this. Stay tuned.
Capital OTB is now streaming live on Roku. The RTN Racing Channel on Roku lets you watch OTB TV live through your Roku device or your Amazon Fire Stick, rather than being limited to computers and mobile devices, which means you can now watch OTB live wherever you are. Simply open Roku, scroll to find the RTN channel, then click on OTB TV. OTB TV on Roku, try it now.
We'll be right back. No matter where in the world you are, the excitement of wagering on horse racing is just a click away. You'll get live streaming, past performances, race replays, our virtual tote board, analysis and selections from professional handicappers, a simple, safe, and secure wagering platform, and best of all, you get track prices. CapitalOTBBet.com. Bet any place, anytime at CapitalOTBBet.com. And be sure to download our new mobile app from the iTunes Store or Google Play.
Welcome back to Racing Across America. As promised before the break, joined now by our friend Tim Wilkin, of course, longtime racing writer for the Times Union, but now off working for the Blood Horse and other organizations, and he was down at Keeneland for the Blood Horse covering the Breeders' Cup, so I thought we'd get some thoughts, some post-Breeders' Cup thoughts from Tim. Tim, good morning.
Good morning, Seth. Happy weekend after the Breeders' Cup.
Absolutely, and just before we get into some specifics, just talk a little bit about the weekend in general, because, you know, watching from afar up here, watching the simulcast signal and whatnot, looking at the numbers afterwards, certainly the handle and the attendance very good. I think the weather held out very well. So talk about Breeders' Cup weekend at Keeneland, just kind of in overview fashion.
Well, this is the third time I've been to the Breeders' Cup at Keeneland, and they do a fantastic job putting on the races and the whole program. And, you know, on Friday, the first day of the Breeders' Cup, I mean, it felt like the first Friday of Saratoga because it was just gorgeous weather, warm. When I was preparing to go down to the Breeders' Cup, I was figuring, do I have to bring gloves? Do I have to bring a winter coat? Do I have to bring a winter hat? I mean, Christ, do I have to bring galoshes? But I talked to people that were down there and said, no, don't worry about it. It's going to be beautiful. And it was. I mean, on Saturday, it wasn't as nice as Friday. It was windy, but it was still warm. I mean, it was a lot of people wearing short sleeves at Keeneland, which, you know, and I remember when they were in the bluegrass there a couple years back, it was snowing. But obviously, that was April. But, you know, they couldn't have asked for a better weather day. And people came out in droves. I mean, they had capped the attendance at 40, but there were over 40,000 there both days, and they all came with their both hands in their pockets, the double fisted betting, because they did a phenomenal job with everything on the betting side and accommodating all the fans that were there. It was just it's a good place to have the Breeders' Cup.
And it was a fabulous 2 days of racing as well. You know, a great venue and a great weather, and it played into great racing also. And we'll talk about some of those, and we'll start out with the highlight, the exclamation point on the weekend. We'll watch the stretch run here. Flightline getting it done, a number four horse. Olympiad runs late. Taba winds up third in here. But after kind of disposing of Life Is Good, boy, what a performance from Flightline. Give us your thoughts on the race and reflect a little bit on what the joint was like down there. It seemed like coming through the TV screen, the place was jumping as Flightline came down the stretch.
It was. I mean, when American Pharoah won the Classic in 15, I mean, it was like a coronation. It was just a crush of sound as he came down. It was almost like reverence, the way that people were reacting to Flightline coming down here, coming down the stretch, because I think everyone expected him to win, but I don't think anyone expected him to win like that, because even though he had done that before, he was running against the best field he'd ever run against. I mean, I had my doubts going into the race if he was going to dominate like he did. But, I mean, you know, when you saw Flavian Pratt on the backside, you know, looking behind him, I mean, he wasn't worried about Life Is Good. He knew he had Life Is Good whenever he wanted. He was wondering if anyone was coming from behind him. And when he did that, I was like, oh, boy, this horse is going to run a hole through the wind, which is exactly what he did. And, you know, just with the effortlessness of the way this horse strode through the lane, I mean, he could have won probably by Pacific Classic lengths But he, you know, they toned him down towards the end. He just jogged across the finish line, and you know, he's a horse for the ages, of course, that we saw, and ever since, you know, the Breeders' Cup and before, a lot of people are making the what some might think would be blasphemous to compare him to the great Secretariat, who, you know, face it, is the best racehorse we've all seen in our lifetime. And I think it's a little, it was too early to compare Flightline to Secretariat because of the body of work. You know, Flightline, six races with won by a combined 71 lengths is just phenomenal. But then Secretariat raced 21 times. I mean, won 16 of them. I just think it's very hard to compare horses of different eras. I mean, Flightline, if Flightline and Secretariat, you know, got together in the starting gate, who would win? I mean, it's nutty to even think about that because horses are two different eras, and it's not fair to either of them to compare like that to say which one is better, even though that's, I get it, that's what people do in horse racing. And, you know, I'm not going to say Flightline would beat Secretariat or the vice versa, but Flightline has definitely earned his spot in horse racing history. I'm just sad that he won't be racing again, because as we all know, the game is not about racing anymore as much as it's about the breeding, and he's just too darn valuable to race again. I mean, and if he were to race again, what does he have left to prove? The fans would love to see him race again. I mean, but he'd have everything to lose rather than gain by continuing to race. Unless, of course, you know, if he's as good as everyone says he is, and he has proven that he would probably continue to just dominate fields. And the one sad thing, Seth, is that I think that in the mainstream sports media, there was a lot of people that didn't even know who Flightline was. Yeah. Because the mainstream sports media, I mean, and the main average sports fan, they follow the Triple Crown. If you don't run the Triple Crown, you're not known to a lot of sports fans, and that's too bad that a lot of media outlets didn't pick up on the Flightline story. And I thought that was sad, but there's no doubt about it. He is one of the best horses we've ever seen.
Yeah, and, you know, the conversation, as you say, in all sports, Bill Russell versus Michael Jordan, it's hard to compare different eras. But I will say that it was fun on social media with the discussion. He's the best. No, how about this? It brought back great memories for everybody, I think, kind of reflecting on the careers of Secretariat and Spectacular Bid and Ghost Zapper. For me, I pulled up the lifetime PPs of my favorite horse, Forgo, and looked at all the weight he carried in his career. And so I think just to generate that conversation was very good. But, yeah, as you say, it would have been tough to bring him back to the races. Monday, they sell the one share, the 2.5% for $4.6 million, which kind of put it all in perspective, yeah. Continuing the career and whatnot. You got me thinking, though, when you talk about the mainstream media, I'm always curious, what was the press box like at the Breeders' Cup?
Well, you know, the trades were all well represented. The Blood Horse had a dozen people there, the Racing Forum. Had, I don't know, 10, maybe 8 to 10 people there. The Pollock Report. I mean, all the players that you would expect that cover the sport extensively, they were all there. I mean, as far as newspapers go, outside of the Kentucky papers, the Louisville Courier-Journal, the Lexington Herald Leader, the Schenectady Gazette was there. Mike McAdam was there. Gene Kirshner was there from Buffalo. Alex Orr was there from the Times Union, my alma mater. And Joe Drape was there from the New York Times. But other than that, I didn't see any other real newspapers there. There were websites there, and there were probably more photographers there than there were print media, which is just, you know, that's the way that the game has gone.
Yeah, it unfortunately is a different era. I say unfortunately, it's changed, it's different. The coverage is still out there. You just have to look in the different spots. Before we move on from Flightline, I want to talk a little bit. I had Mike Welch on a couple of weeks ago, and the day before I had him on, it was the Flightline workout, and I was kind of reminiscing. I don't know whether anything one of my favorite racetrack memories, American Pharoah in the morning up at Saratoga with, you know, thousands right. turning out. But it seemed like there was a, kind of a fairly similar reaction to the morning workout, the last workout of Flightline up there prior to the Breeders' Cup.
Yeah, I wasn't there for that. I hadn't gotten into town yet. But I saw the pictures and the people that I talked to. You know, they said that there was a very healthy crowd of people that came out to see Flightline at 7:30 in the morning at Keeneland. And, you know, it wasn't Farrowish like it was at Saratoga, because we all remember what happened there. You had people on the backstretch getting out there. How they got out there, I don't know. And, you know, there were people, you know, it seemed like every box seat was covered by fans that just came up. There was a traffic jam on Union Avenue when the American Pharoah was going to gallop, you know, the day before the Travers, and it was one of the biggest spectacles that you've seen at Saratoga that didn't have a race next to its name. I mean, that was one of the all-time wow moments for me at Saratoga when American Pharoah came to town. I mean, it wasn't like that as far as Flightline was at Keeneland, but they still had a very healthy crowd of people that wanted to come out and see him. And I think a lot of that, too, I mean, Saratoga is the summer track, and also American Pharoah was the Triple Crown winner, and people wanted to come. People knew who American Pharoah was.
Yeah.
It is horse country in Lexington, and people know the horses down there, but the average sports fan still might not be familiar with Flightline, and they never will be, unfortunately.
Yeah, the Triple Crown winner and the long wait and whatnot, I'll play. But I will never forget that. But it was still kind of fun to see. They got a nice crowd out there in the morning to see a very, very special horse. Let's move on now and get some other thoughts, because Flightline obviously was the exclamation point. But I'm going to pull up the replay of what I think was the best race of the day. We're going to look at the Distaff finish here. I mentioned Mike Welch when I had him on a week before. He tossed out Blue Stripe as a horse he thought was working very well, and it was a great call by Mike. Blue Stripe here is going to be the number two horse at 24-1, just missing in the photo. I like Clairiere on the rail. I thought she ran very well, but Malathat gets it done for John Velasquez and Todd Pletcher. And as I say, I think for me, this was certainly the best race of the afternoon and the best finish and the most excitement. What was the feeling around Keeneland as they came down the stretch in the Distaff?
Oh, just like you would expect it to be. The place was going crazy as these three talented fillies, the mares, came thundering to the stretch. And up in the box seats, Todd Pletcher was watching the race, and on his naked eye, he thought he had gotten it. He started to pump his fist, and, you know, for Todd to show a little emotion, that doesn't happen a lot. So he was saying in the post-race press conference that he was thinking he didn't want to embarrass himself after doing that, because they crossed the line, he kept watching the replays. He wasn't sure who had won, and, you know, the different angles that he was seeing it from. He thought he had gotten it. Johnny V didn't know if he had gotten it. But, you know, this Malathat, you know, this, talk about a horse that refuses to lose.
Yeah.
And when she's right, she's not going to give an inch, and she basically won the race by an inch and capped off a marvelous career for Todd. And, you know, it's another bittersweet thing. You know, they all got to retire at some point, but, you know, she's not going out on the top of her game, and it would have been nice to see her come back, but, you know, that's not in the cards. So, you know, hats off to Malathat for a great, great stretch drive to end her career.
10 wins in 14 starts, and now 4-for-4 after that win, 4-for-4 at Keeneland. She had won the Spinster coming in, which was a little bit of a theme. Horses that had won the prep going into this at Keeneland did very well in one of those, and I saw you had some coverage in the Blood Horse, the Juvenile Fillies. I wanted to show that as well, because it was kind of funny. I went back and looked at the interview I did with Mark Cassie at Saratoga talking about Wonder Wheel. And Mark said it's easier to kind of come up with a real opinion on a horse after they have five starts. We were talking before the spin away. That was going to be her third start, and she ran second. And Mark said, you know, I'll have a better idea after five starts. Well, she runs second in the spin away in start number three. Then she wins the Alcibiades down at Keeneland, start number four, and wins the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Filly in start number five in the career. And we'll take a look at the stretch run here. Wonder Wheel will be the number five horse. Phil Serpy runs second nicely with Leave No Trace. But Wonder Wheel, I'm pretty sure now after five starts, Mark has to feel pretty good about Wonder Wheel.
Well, heck, he was talking after the race how, you know, he put himself out on a limb very early in Wonder Wheel's career, talking about how good she was and how good she was going to be. And, you know, and I'd asked him after the race about, you know, why did you do that? You know, you're putting a lot of pressure not only on the horse but on yourself. But he said, you know, he goes, when I have an opinion like this, and I know Mark pretty well, he's going to say what he thinks about a potential champion. And he was right on with this one. And it was a great ride by Tyler Caffleone coming off the rail and putting this horse in position to get this win. Who knows what the ceiling is for this one as we move on. But hats off to a great trading job by Mark. And he backed up his words with it pretty well.
Yeah, and you would have to think sewed up an eclipse there on the juvenile female side. And I wanted to also just get some thoughts on the juvenile male side, because Forte looked good. And I wanted to pull this up again because I've been talking about it really throughout the career. I was sitting in here when Forte won the career debut in May, and I said, this is going to be a nice-looking horse. They immediately pointed to the Sanford, disappointed there running fourth, but then they win the Hopeful, the Breeders' Futurity, and subsequently, we'll see him coming down the stretch here in Forte winning the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. Again, you would have to think solidifying an Eclipse Award for Pletcher and Rapoli. So another one of the nice performances on the Friday card.
Yeah, no doubt. You know, I'm beating Cave Rock because a lot of Baffert's Cave Rock, you know, a lot of people going into the Breeders' Cup thought that might be the second biggest lock of the Breeders' Cup after Flightline. But, you know, it wasn't to be for that one. And now Forte has the unenviable spot of being the early favorite for the Kentucky Derby. Because historically, winners of the Breeders' Cup Juvenile don't win the Kentucky Derby. It's only happened twice, Street Sense in 06 and Nyquist in 16, and a bunch of them never even got to the Run for the Roses. So, most notable, I mean, Corniche last year didn't make it to it. I mean, there's been horses obviously that have run well in the Derby after winning the Juvenile. Essential Quality ran well in the Derby. Good Magic, just to name a couple. But if I was Rapoli, I'd be like, dang, we won the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. Now we're not going to win the Derby. But he's a very nice horse.
Yeah, but that also gives you the chance to kind of, you know, break the curse, as it were, and really step forward. So with a guy like Rapoli, he's probably happy with the challenge. It's going to be fun to watch, certainly, because he is a very nice horse. But, as you say, Cave Rock beaten, ran well, certainly ran well, but beaten in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. But Saturday started with a very nice Baffert horse. I know you're friendly with Baffert. I'm wondering if you talked at all. We'll watch the stretch run here. Arabian Knight. They elect to leave Southern California, debut on the Breeders' Cup Saturday in the first race. A $2.3 million purchase. Had worked 9.4 before that Ocala sale. And Arabian Knight, we're looking at this one coming down the stretch. Very impressive in the opener on Breeders' Cup Saturday. Thoughts on this one? Buzz around the track. Did you talk to Baffert about the horse?
Well, I talked to him a little bit about it, and you know, he expected what we saw. I mean, this was almost like, I'm going to bring this horse to the Breeders' Cup and showcase him. He's not going to be in a Breeders' Cup race, but this is a darn talented and very potential, has the potential for some really good things. And he was as advertised. Now, of course, you know, because Bob still has another year to go at Churchill, that band. So if this horse is going to run the Kentucky Derby, he's going to have to be with a different trainer. And, you know, and again, it's a story for another day, but I just think it was way too much of a penalty that they imposed on him. But who knows? Maybe we'll see him next year in the Travers, because this his ban with Naira is up in January. So Bob could very well have a presence at Saratoga next summer. And, you know, we might see, who knows, maybe he'll see Taba in the Whitney.
Yeah, exactly. And speaking of Taba, I also wanted to touch on, we were talking a little bit about it during the handicapping show earlier, Anthony Mormino and I, the three-year-old championship. Taba, Epicenter, with Taba finishing third in the Breeders' Cup Classic. Epicenter injured, subsequently surgery, goes on to a stallion career. But with their resumes, how do things end up? The NTRA poll this week has them sitting next to each other, I think 6 and 7, 7 and 8, with Epicenter slightly ahead, which gives an idea that folks may be kind of closer than you might think on those two when it comes to the three-year-old championship. But where does Modern Games fit in? Because on Twitter, a lot of people are tilting towards the horse that has, you know, the Woodbine Mile and the Breeders' Cup Turf on the resume. So the three-year-old championship this year, I think, is going to be very, very interesting.
Well, you know, I think again, Modern Games is a very, very good turf horse. But turf horses do not win the three-year-old Eclipse. That's just the way the voting's always gone. And I expect that that will not change this year either, because Epicenter has the front track to get the award, even though he's only got the one grade one, the Travers, but he was second in the Derby, he was second in the Preakness, he won the Jim Dandy. He's a horse that will probably win. I don't know, and I think Table could make it close if he runs some more this year. Let's say he runs at the end of the year, the Malibu. He's got two grade ones, the Santa Anita Derby and the Pennsylvania Derby, and I know the Travers carries a lot more weight than the Pennsylvania Derby. And, you know, Taba went lightly raced, went from winning the Santa Anita Derby, I think in the second start, to the Derby, and was like 15th, so he was never a factor in that. And, you know, there are people that say, well, Rich Strike, shouldn't he be in the conversation? He might be in the conversation, but he won't win, because the Derby at 80-1 is his only win this year. And, you know, yes, it is the most important race for three-year-olds, but, the three-year-old champion is a body of work, not a race body of work. So I would say, I don't know who I'm going to vote for yet, but I would expect that Epicenter will win. You know, it's kind of unfortunate we didn't get to see what he could have done in the Classic. I don't think he would have beaten Flightline, but, you know, he certainly could have been a factor in the stretch. And, you know, it's just good that he recovered from that surgery and will be able to have a career as a stallion. But as far as the three-year-old, it's the three-year-old group. It wasn't a bad group. It wasn't a great group. I would say maybe a mediocre group. You know, because you got a lot of the three-year-old major players during the season that weren't around at the end, like Mo Donegal, like early voting. Now Jack Christopher's been retired. There was flashes of talent all through the year with these. Inside, didn't even mention Cyber Knight, but you had flashes of brilliance in different times during the year, but no one really stood out as far as a consistent mow 'em down kind of three-year-old.
I think I'm with you. Epicenter certainly, I think, is probably the leader. Taba could be interesting if that Malibu goes on the resume at the end of the year, but it's going to be fun to watch. Also, just wanted to get some thoughts, certainly on the television broadcast, and NBC did a very nice job. They also had, I was here at the Racebook in Albany, and we were watching the actual simulcast coming from Keeneland/Breeders' Cup, but they also covered it. The Cody's Wish story, certainly with the victory adding to the whole story, was, you know, the tearjerker story of the weekend. What was it like being live there at Keeneland?
Well, you know, it was like a Hollywood ending for this story when you saw the horse Cody's Wish, you know, storming down the track and besting Cyberknife in the mile, and then they flash right to young Cody Dorman, the 16-year-old with the genetic that he was born with it, and he's confined to a wheelchair and he can't speak and he uses a tablet, and it's been documented that this, he has a, you know, he's named, the horse is named for him. And you know, during the week at Keeneland, the young kid and his family came out to the barn. Bill Mott brought Cody's wish out, and the horse went right over to the kid, put his head in his lap, and you know, it was very emotional. And you know, if you don't, if your heart doesn't bleed a little bit after seeing something like that, you got to get it checked, because that was the story of the Breeders' Cup as far as the best story, I think. You know, it's, and then, you know, you show the kid, he has a, they drape the garland or blanket of flowers, the Breeders' Cup flowers that would go on the horse around him. There were tears in the child's eyes, and, you know, just a real neat story. And it's a pretty cool horse. He's going to run next year, which is great.
Yeah, it really was the story of the weekend, certainly. And one other story, and you wrote about it in the Blood Horse, and before we let you go, I got Terry Finley coming up momentarily, but just quickly, you alluded to it a little bit earlier, Rich Strike, and I know you're friendly with Eric Reed, and you helped get him over. I still appreciate it, get him over to talk with us during Saratoga. That was a fun interview. But you had a Blood Horse article about Eric Reed really looking forward to going forward into the four-year-old season with Rich Strike. Reflect on that a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, when I went to go see them, I mean, I don't know if Eric was 100% sold in on wanting to run in the Breeders' Cup. It might have been an owner thing. I think Eric, if it was just strictly up to him, might have waited for the Clark Handicap. Excuse me, but they're already planning on a four-year-old season. They want to start in Saudi. And oh, then to come back and run in the Stephen Foster, and the goal for them is to bring the horse to the Whitney in Saratoga, which would be great for us up here in upstate, and then the Lucas Classic, and then back to the Breeders' Cup. That's the early blueprint they have for next year, but they are confident that this horse could be a factor in the older horse division next year. And you know, he didn't run a bad fourth in the Classic. I mean, really, the only bad race he ran at after Derby was the Belmont,
yeah.
And Eric will tell you till the cows come home that was his fault, because trying to change tactics. But this horse, if he stays healthy, I think he's going to win a couple races next year, some big ones.
Yeah, he says outrun my opinion that Lucas Classic, the close-up second to Hot Rod Charlie, very good. Looking forward to him next year. Tim, appreciate the visit and the conversation. Great work for the Blood Horse covering some of the action down there last weekend. And as I say, appreciate the conversation this morning. We'll talk again.
Sounds good, Scott. Sounds good to spend some time with you.
Appreciate it. Our friend Tim Wilkin, who is, again, down at Keeneland last weekend covering the Breeders' Cup for the Blood Horse. If you haven't read some of his recaps and whatnot, you can go check them out at bloodhorse.com. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, as promised earlier, Terry Finley, West Point Thoroughbreds, part of the partnership group behind Flightline. We'll talk that and more. Stay tuned.
Come on.
I want sales reports on my desk by Monday.
Whoops. My bad.
Love racing? RTN brings you every live simulcast on your home television, plus live video streaming and race replays on your PC and mobile devices. To order, visit RTN.tv. RTN, a breed apart.
Bridgestone is an outside front. They're coming down to the finish. Can Smarty Jones hold on? Here comes Bridgestone. Bridgestone surges past. Bridgestone wins the Belmont Stakes.
Having trouble finding us?
It's actually quite simple. Whether online or on your TV, it's never been easier to watch and wager on championship horse racing with Capital OTB. Simply log on to CapitalOTBBet.com. There you can watch our morning shows, live stream races, and wager on our state-of-the-art wagering platform. You can also watch from the comfort of your home on Spectrum Cable Channel 1250 or Fios Channel 467. And win more with Capital OTB.
Welcome back to Racing Across America. Jumping out of the plane with Terry Finley. We were talking before the before we came on the air here. It was giving Terry a little bit of a countdown. He says, like when you parachute out of a plane, 30 seconds, 10 seconds, the heart starts pounding. Terry, good morning.
Hello, Seth. Wonderful to be on with you. And just a great Saturday in Kentucky.
I want to touch on the parachuting before. How many times have you done that?
Only 12. Yeah. I got some buddies that were into the hundreds, but I really liked it, but I was glad I don't do it anymore. Let's leave it at that, right?
that's kind of my – it seems like, boy, that'd be fun, but then I kind of think, would it? I'm not – yeah. So, all right, let's get to Saturday, and, boy, I'm just happy for you guys. I mean, this was just phenomenal. It was an exclamation point on the weekend, an exclamation point – on his career, and we're going to pull up. We'll start right with it. We're going to pull up the entire race here. We watched the stretch run. We talked a little bit about it with Tim Wilkin earlier, but we're going to pull up the entire race because I want to see the fractions flash up there, and I want you to kind of take us through as they come out of the gate and go, and those fractions are going up, and who knew at the time the 107 wasn't legitimate, and I'm wondering what you all were thinking when that 107 came up. But he's out there, and Life Is Good is running his race, and you're running yours. Take us around the track for the flight line win in the Breeders' Cup Classic.
I sure will. When they broke, obviously we wanted him to have a clean break, and he broke running, unlike a couple of his starts where he hadn't. And I saw Hot Rod Charlie tried to come down on him ever so slightly, maybe just to intimidate him, but he didn't. You know, he was having nothing of that, just pulled his way through. When they went by us, I saw Life Is Good. He was absolutely on the engine and on his game, but we just got very settled very quickly. So it only took us, you know, less than a quarter of a mile to get settled in that beautiful the rhythm that we have. And I know I heard Larry Colmus say a fast quarter and a fast half as they turned on the backside. So I guess the biggest thing that I was thinking about was, you're not supposed to be 10 lengths as you turn down the backside. You're not supposed to be 10 in front of six grade one winners. So I was paying attention to the riders on those six horses to see kind of what the next action that they were going to take, because obviously they knew they were either going to say, well, they're going to come back to us, or it's time to get going. And it was obviously sooner than a normal race and the composition of it. As they go into the far turn, I saw Flavian. We kind of gave our dude a breather. He was getting ready to change over to his left lead, and he was just running like his stride and his rhythm and everything looked like it was going as well as it was in the Pacific Classic, right? But he was still like three lengths back of Life Is Good, who I thought was traveling very easily and comfortably. I don't know where you're at on the video right now, but I think he moved his hand. Our rider, Flavian, he moved his hands ever so slightly and, three lengths very quickly went to like a half a length in the middle of the turn. And I thought we were in pretty good shape then as they turned for home because, he has that surge, like he just wants to envelop the world when he gets going on that. And it was a very pleasant, I'd say, last quarter of a mile when I saw that there was nobody from the back of the pack. I'm making a a big run at us. So I thought we were very comfortable after we got past Life Is Good.
Yeah, you say very comfortable kind of last quarter. I guess so, because he dispatches Life Is Good. And you can see, even with those early fractions, nobody's really coming, and he's pulling away. And the chart margin winds up to be, I'm looking at the chart here, 8.25, which I guess is the largest margin ever in the Breeders' Cup Classic. Stamps himself with another 120-plus buyer, a 121. What's the reaction, particularly, you know, in a race like that with a horse like this, when goes by Life Is Good, and as you say, that last certainly the eighth of a mile, you're just rooting them home. You know you got it. What's it like up in the box seats with the team and just kind of rooting them down the stretch?
Well, so there's a couple things that come into play. you'll laugh and you'll smile at this, but my wife just had neck surgery, so a couple weeks in New York City. So she was in a brace, and so we were all in there together. So I knew I couldn't start whipping and driving, right? And so when they turned for home and he got past him, I just kind of dropped my hands and I was in awe. I just like a lot of people, when I saw the video of the crowd, I think I would have expected, you know, the crowd to have gone, been a little bit more emphatic, but they weren't. And, you know, plenty of people told me they were just in awe of, you know, a great, great racehorse in front of them. So that, if you see, you know, we were all kind of stunned and, you know, it was very emotional, because you're in the midst of greatness. We are a small part of Flightline, but to be in his midst, I know there were a lot of people that were choked up and crying, and it will be a moment in time that I think I and my family, and of course the West Point team and the West Point family, will never forget.
Yeah, Tim Wilkins said, you know, American Pharoah, the crowd went crazy, and he had kind of the reaction you did. He referred to it as reverence. You know, they were expecting the winner from Flightline, so they just, the jaws were dropping, and they were just appreciating the effort being put forth there the other day. Reflect a little bit also, I've talked about it, I had Mike Welch on a couple weeks ago, and it was just the day before that Flightline had been out on the track, and I guess his work out there attracted a nice big crowd in the morning as well.
Yes, it did. It did, Seth, and that was really a special. You know, there were a bunch of special moments last week, you know, as we got closer. But that Saturday morning, it was 7:30, and it doesn't get light as quickly in Kentucky because of the, you know, you get closer to the time change area. So it was still dark, but it was just coming light, and he worked like, you know, you think back to Secretariat when they worked him. And they did the movie, they worked them at Saratoga in the dark, but they had lights. And that's kind of, it was reminiscent of that scene in Secretariat, or I'm sorry, in Seabiscuit. And that's what it was. I mean, I think we all, the ownership group and John Sadler, that kind of clinched the fact, or pushed the confidence meter to as high as it could go. And so that really helped us, I think, in a lot of ways, because we walked around all week knowing that if everything stayed on track, we were going to be very, very tough to handle in the Breeders' Cup Classic. And that's a cool thing to have, like a whole week knowing that if you don't have any bad luck or something outrageous happens, you're going to probably win. And so I think that really helped us all in any number of ways.
Well, talk a little bit about that. What's the percentage of in a situation like that, pressure versus confidence, you know, pressure versus a good feeling, because you want a big favorite going into the Breeders' Cup. That's always good news, but it does put a level of pressure on things.
Well, I'll say this. Tommy Bellhouse, who's up there, and I know he's probably listening, he's been a teammate, a great teammate for many, many years, over 15 years. As an aside, I remember he was one of the first team members that I was able to engage with after the race. And, you know, we all work hard. I'm not everybody in the thoroughbred business has the privilege of being around a horse like this and being involved with it. So I know that Tommy and I, especially in the rest of the team, in a collective way, we realize how blessed we are. But, you know, it's just you get in a spot where you tell yourself, listen, stop thinking about it. Just stop thinking about it. Because we're in the horse business, you're always thinking about what can happen. There's so many things that have to go right, and there's only one thing that can go wrong to get you beat, but so many things have to go right to win. And so that's what we committed to each other. We just weren't going to let the normal thoughts of, what if this happens, that happens. We're just going to say, and we did, we're going to rebel, and we were going to bask in the glory of being a small part of our flight line. Because he took a lot of us to a spot in our lives and in the business, right, that none of us have ever been to. And quite frankly, I'd be stunned if any of us ever get even near the point that he took us to, again in the future.
That's interesting, because on the handicappers report earlier, Anthony Mormino said, well, maybe ask Terry what it's like to have a horse at that level where you might never get to that level again. I mean, they're referring to this horse, you look on social media, as one of the all-time greats, and the comparisons are being made. And I said, it's been great for the horse racing game. It just has people talking about horse racing and some of these great horses. But what has it been like, and have you had a chance to reflect and say, we've had one of the all-time greats in our midst?
Yeah. So, I'd love to get a quick time spot to talk about the retirement, because I know a lot of people have talked about that, but we'll talk about that in a minute. But yes, I have, I envision the possibility, Seth, of getting interviewed, grabbing the microphone from NBC, right, getting interviewed, and then just dropping the mic and saying, I'll see you guys in the Bahamas, right? And so that lasted, I don't know, about 23 hours, because the next night I was at the Facebook Tipton. I was still trying to buy mares to breed the flight line. So, I mean, look, this game, you can't get out of it. You don't want to get, we don't want to get out of it. And, we were all exhausted. I can't imagine how exhausted John Sadler and his team were, especially John and Juan Leyva, the assistant trainer. But it was an exhausting, exhilarating experience. But we jumped right back in. We bought a bunch of mares, and it's just a fascinating road. All of a sudden, he's a dominating factor in a lot of lives, especially as we begin to prepare and get his stud career underway.
And I also wanted to talk, you talked about the sale. I pulled up a little video here and talk about big crowds. I don't know whether I've ever seen a sales pavilion as full as it was for the share of Flight Line. $4.6 million, and we're looking at the auction going on here. And again, every seat is full. Talk a little bit about this. What was the decision-making process? And as I understand, it was from your portion, the 2.5%. First, is that correct? And what was the decision to put it up? And what was it like on Monday to be in the pavilion?
Yeah.
Because, again, just insane looking at the video here.
It was insane, Seth. I had never been part of it. And so keep in mind, I somebody asked me, was it so concentrated? And the reason is because when you have a sale going on, you might have a big dollar horse that goes through the ring, but it's not like anybody says at 12:30, the Green Monkey's going through the ring. The Green Monkey's just going to flow through. Now that I understand that probably will bring a roll of the eye, but any expensive horse here, they said the share was going to be sold at 12:30. So basically the whole pavilion and a lot of people from Lexington and the outskirts knew that either before or after lunch they were going to be in the pavilion. So there was barely a seat available, and it just went really well. They put it in the metaverse, which I think is really the start of the process of incorporating the metaverse into the thoroughbred business. But all the credit to Keeneland and to Bill Farish and the Lane's End team. They came up with this, with it. They presented it to me. I went to all the partners, and we cobbled together a share. And, you know, we basically had no idea. I you know, you can see my text messages. You know, I said if we get to the $3 million mark, we're going to be over the moon. But realistically, at 2.5%, or I'm sorry, 2.5 million, they would have valued Flightline at 100 million, and that would have been unheard of. So I said, don't expect 2.5 million, but if we get lucky and we have the auction dynamic, we could get there. And so that just goes to show you, like, it's a public auction. You have the sizzle and the stake of a horse like Flightline 48 hours after he wins the biggest race in the world. And, you know, you ended up having an entrepreneur from Seattle who's in the coffee business, who really is not, he's involved in the business in a minor way, but he said, I want a piece of the phenomenon that is a Flightline. And he ended up beating out the Coolmore boys, who were the underbidder, at 4-5. So, everything worked out. It was a really good 48 hours, I can assure you that.
And I will tell you, it's been good for the game and whatnot, because I play a little old man basketball at the Y in Saratoga on Mondays and Wednesdays and Fridays. And that Monday, people were talking about the race, and that last Wednesday, people were talking about the auction. And these are not horse racing-centric people necessarily, but Flightline, you know, being in Saratoga, obviously, caught their attention, yeah, certainly. So it was a lot of fun. And again, it was fun to watch that video. It's just a place jam-packed and whatnot. I also pulled up some video because I also wanted to talk a little bit about this guy. Was a hometown sale right up here at Facing Tipton in Saratoga in 2019. And we have some video of that yearling auction. I ran into you that night. I think it was right after the horse was sold for $1 million.
I remember, Seth.
Reflect a little bit on buying the horse right up here at Saratoga a couple of years ago as a yearling.
Well, a lot of things ran through my mind as I reflected back on that. You know, Basic Tipton, you know, has been instrumental in our company's career. You know, back when we didn't have access to the capital that we have now, i.e., we put some of our purchases on credit cards and on credit. You know, Boyd Browning was like, I would go in and see him, and I just say, listen, you're not going to get beat here. You have my word that I'll go to the end of the world to get you paid. And, you know, when you think about that and somebody, you know, trusting and supporting you when they really have no reason to support you, it's just they want to do well and they want to help, you know, be part of growing a business. Like, that's what I was very happy about, and knowing that it's not easy to have the horse of the year. A lot of them are homebreds, and, you know, Keeneland obviously is the behemoth. So, you know, they punch way above their weight, and it's a fabulous team. It really is, and I know it's easy to say that, but they care about people, as does Keeneland. I'm not disparaging Keeneland, but, you know, Fazig, you know, they're my boys. They're my boys, and Boy Browning and Max Hodge, and I hope, and I pretty much know that they're reveling in the glory of having sold a horse of the year as a yearling up in Saratoga.
Well, I was just looking the other day, and I still have three of the catalogs sitting on my bookshelf, so I'm happy to have those from that three years ago now, when Flightline was sold up there. But it was fun to see that, you know, local sale makes it big, very, very big. And as I mentioned earlier, discussion on social media and whatnot, all-time great, how's he stack up, where is he? And you alluded that you would like to touch on that a little bit. So where do you fall in the discussion of Flightline as he compares to some of the all-time greats?
Yeah, so one thing, somebody, a significant player in the business, and I really do, I think Tommy Bellhouse and I and the rest of us, you know, we respect the people that have attained great heights in our business, and I'm constantly talking to people, Shug McGahee, Billy Mott, and, you know, so there was a significant player in the business who kind of pulled me aside in Kentucky And I had not engaged in the comparison side of things, and I don't intend to. And he said, you know, comparisons, they suck joy, especially in the horse business. They suck joy out of your out of the enjoyment that you have with your horse. And that really struck me. I don't, you know, obviously Secretary is one. I said it right before the race. I hope we do Secretary proud. And I think after the race, that was one of the first things. I hope we did do Secretary and his connections proud. There's no reason to get cross and to pin anybody's ear. We're not going to pin our ears if, you know, somebody says we haven't run enough. I understand it's a different world, but, you know, I think when you step back in the light of the day, we're just going to celebrate Flightline, and we'll let future generations. We just hope that he's remembered as a great horse, and you know, that's really where we stand with the comparison of all these great horses. I mean, they were all fun. I would have loved to have owned any one of them. I would have loved to have owned all of them, but we're very blessed that we've had a piece of the ride that is Flightline.
Yeah, I like that, and I think you nailed it. And I said earlier when I was talking to Tim Wilkin, I said, you know, all sports, it's tough to compare different eras. Bill Russell versus Michael Jordan, and Flightline versus Secretariat. Let's celebrate all of them. And as I said, I think that's what's happened this week on social media, as people have been saying, no, this one's great. What about this? Spectacular Bid and Secretariat. And people have had the chance to go back. Maybe even young people who weren't alive or weren't fans at the time have had a chance to go back and reflect on some of that as well. So I think it's been good for the game. And I think Flightline is going to go down in the pantheon as one of the all-time greats, given what we saw with the career and what we saw last weekend. So, again, congratulations on the weekend and being a part of the horse. And just as a knowing all you guys, it was fun for me to kind of watch the career and enjoy last weekend as well. But all of that said, life goes on. And so I'm in here doing some handicapping and whatnot. You have two tomorrow down at Aqueduct in the turf races, Parnak and one of my favorites, Decorated Invader, in the Winter Memories and the Artie Schiller, respectively. Give me some thoughts on your two runners tomorrow down on the grass at Aqueduct.
Yeah, I know Tommy Bellhouse will smile at this one. We were down in Florida together. We went up to see Christoph up at Payson, and he had just gotten a call from France while we were in his tack room. And the guy said, I guess it might have been his brother. Hey, we've got a really nice, a nice filly, could be a good fit for America. And her name was Parnak. She did not get off to a great start. It took her a good long while to adapt and to kind of come around from the trip. But I think that was a great effort in her last start. I mean, she'll be 5 or 6 to 1 tomorrow. And I do. I'm hoping she takes the next step. You know, she did have excuses. She just wasn't settled enough throughout the summer. So we're hoping that we can get her on the right track and set her up for a great 2023. Decorated Invader, he just had some time off. He had some bone bruising, and he, you know, Christoph and Miguel Clement and the team have just really done a great job. I mean, we've all seen those older turf campaigners. You know, they get some time away or they have an injury. They don't always come back with the same vigor and zip as they had before, but a Decorated Invader certainly seems like he's fairly close to where he was before. And so we're hoping he sets up for a great 2023. I think he's going to be the same thing. He'll be 5 or 6 to 1, and we work out a trip and see if we can get the job done in those two stakes tomorrow.
Yeah, Decorated Invader won the summer stakes up at Woodbine back in 2019. That was our last trip up there. I always like to go up to Woodbine, but with the pandemic and whatnot, we haven't been back. But now comes out of a nice win at Woodbine in the second start off of that layoff you talked about. Now makes the third start back. I'd be interested to see what he does. But a couple of nice runners tomorrow on the grass down at Aqueduct. Terry, again, just congratulations to you. Pass it on to the whole team. It's been fun to watch throughout the career, but particularly going back last Saturday and put the exclamation point on a very big weekend. I will also tell people, I tell you all the time, you guys as a partnership have a great website that allows people who are just fans to kind of keep up with your horses, where they may be pointing, what the results are and whatnot. It's westpointtb.com if you'd like more information. But again, Terry, appreciate the visit. Congratulations, and we'll talk again.
I'll just say a final thing, Seth. I appreciate the opportunity today. Just on behalf of the team and the industry, just want to say thank you, Flightline.
Yeah, very good. Well said. Terry, appreciate it. Terry Finley from West Point Thoroughbreds. Again, you can go to westpointtb.com for more information. I'm looking up at my other monitor, and they're already underway with the pregame at NYRA, so I will wrap it up so we can take a listen there. I'll be back in about an hour or so with OTB Live for a Saturday afternoon. Looking forward to it. Some really nice racing ahead on this Saturday afternoon, so you can look forward to that. Hopefully you've enjoyed Racing Across America on this Saturday morning. I appreciate your tuning in. Seth Merrow in the studio. Don't forget, today there's an Exacta board promotion here at the Clubhouse Racebook, so if you'd like to come down and try to have a little extra fun with the Exacta board promotion, we'd love to have you down here, 711 Central Avenue in Albany. Otherwise, I'm going to wrap it up for Racing Across America. We'll be back in tomorrow, Racing Across America at 10 a.m. for some recap conversation. But in the meantime, about an hour or so, back in for OTB Live for Saturday afternoon. I'll see you then.
You're watching OTB TV, a service of Capital Off-Track Betting.